Thanks for joining us on KPUPLP Patagonia 100.5 FM Community Talk. I'm your host, Julie Holding. Community Talk airs every other week, alternating with Charlotte Lowe's show at the same time, 5 p.m. on Sundays, on KPUP, Patagonia Community Radio. Joining me in the studio today is Mary Monroe. Mary moved to Patagonia in 1993, when she retired from running a preschool in South Tucson. She had her house here for 8 years before that. She's the mother of five, the grandmother of nine, and great-grandmother of three. In Patagonia, she's also known as Olivia de Javelina, the editor and publisher of the Patagonia Press, which ran between 1996 and 2000. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Glad to be here, Julie. Hi.
Did you have newspaper experience before the Patagonia Press?
Oh, of course. When I was 16, I worked for three local newspapers on Cape Cod. And I also was the editor of my college newspaper. Aside from that, no.
Well, that's a fair amount. What kinds of things did you write when you were working on your high school and college papers?
Oh, the high school, this was the local news, the yacht club news, high school news, whatever. And I got paid 10 cents an inch.
10 cents a column inch.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And what about when you were editor of the college paper? What college was that? And
oh,
what did
I
you
went
do?
To a teacher's college in Massachusetts. And I was editor by default. Something happened to the editor and I was next in line. So I finished out the year. That was it. Yeah.
And so people submitted articles to you and you
edited and decided
what would be in.
Right. And set type. We set type back then. Yeah.
For those who might not know what setting type was, can you describe that?
Well, we had to pick out each letter out of a box with all the different sizes and shapes of letters and set them into patterns in order to take them to the printer and have him print them.
So every single letter of every single word was hand-picked out of a box.
Yep. That was it.
That was sounds very time-consuming.
It was, yeah.
But all newspapers were done that way at that time?
I think so. I think that was the only thing they knew how to do at that point, back in the dark ages.
Well, why did you start the Patagonia Press once you had come here?
Well, probably because I was bored, for one thing. And for another, I was writing occasionally for the weekly bulletin when it was under other ownership. And I'd written an article about Paula Wittner's show in Scottsdale, which they wouldn't print because she wasn't an advertiser. So in talking with the community, we discovered they didn't print anything that was given to them. So we said, well, we'll do it ourselves.
And how did you physically put it together? Were you setting type for this one?
No. No. We used computers and we had programs. We did not have a program, though, to create an entire paper. So we just did the cut paste thing. And
with the scissors and the
tape? Absolutely. Yes.
And then once you had it laid out, how did you get it printed?
Took it to Tucson to a printer and they pulled it together. And I picked it up and delivered it all over Hell's Kitchen and then sent it off in the mail and put it out for people to read, and that was it.
Okay, well, let's look at the first issue from March of 1996. What did you say then about starting the paper?
The poem, okay. This is the editor's note. And Wiley had his drawing beside my first poem here. "'Twas a long winter's night and not much to do. With heads put together, the ideas flew. Patagonia women, a right lively group, decided a paper would spice up the soup. The arts, the children, community news, a rural collection of personal views. And so to that end, they created this mess, affectionately known as the Patagonia Press."
And so who was involved in that first issue?
Well, I'm looking here, and the contributors were Ann Caston, Emily Covey, Wiley, Dean Voltz, Sally Greenleaf, Mary Lou Harris, Jennifer Jones, Bobby Kurtz, Nancy Matson, Kathleen Preserve, Jean Rukila, and Mary Wetzel.
And give us an idea of the different kinds of things, if you remember, what some or all of those folks did to help contribute with the paper.
I'm looking here. We had, some of them were doing editing, which it needed a lot of. Mary Wetzel did history. Kathleen did sketches. Bobby Kurtz wrote. Jennifer Jones wrote about chiropractic. Mary Lou wrote about the gardens. We had council news, and we had arts news and theater news and anything that was happening. Yep.
It's been said that one of the first steps to starting something new is enrolling others in your vision. How did you get so many people involved?
Well, they'd all tried to get things published in the weekly bulletin. So they decided they'd darn well do it themselves as well. So that was how it happened.
All right. When I introduced you, I mentioned Olivia de Havilena. She was one of my favorite parts of the paper. And do you have something there that you can read from her writing?
Right. And introducing Olivia, she was created because I wanted to do an article from the pig's pen because I liked the sound of the double use of pen. And no one wanted to be the pig, so I thought that would be a good thing for me to be. So I created Olivia so that she would have her place in the paper from the animal kingdom. This was, I'm not sure what, 1999. The Patagonia peccary population is in hiding in preparation for the hunting season, which will run from January 1st to February 25th. Olivia de Havilena has joined Gregory Peccary and Carrie Grunt and others and headed for the hills, far away from hunters. She'll be back when the coast is clear. So that was one reference to Olivia.
During the run of the paper, there were some very newsworthy events in town, and I remember one of those being the financial crisis that we had in 1998. Do you have a piece from that time that you could share with us?
Okay, here's the mayor speaks. At a morning visit with Mayor Chipman, we learned the extent of his concern for the town, which is great. He compared the town's operation to the cactus. When there are volunteers to make things run, the town thrives and grows. When the volunteers stop, all the programs start to shrink or die. His aim is to make the town self-sufficient so that it can operate without going into debt, just maintaining its existing programs. And he went on to say that he'd exhausted all possible remedies short of a property tax. Would like to know how the town felt about a small tax on property or annexation or whatever might bring in more money to the town. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It does sound familiar. Mm-hmm. Definitely resonates with our issues over town budget, which seem to be perpetual for such a small town.
Right.
I remember you giving the kids of our community a number of column inches in the Patagonia Press.
And yes, they sometimes had a whole page with their art and their writings. And this was from New Year's of 1999. And it was second grade wishes for the new year. I wish the school had the new stuff now because it would really better my life. That's Freddie. I wish everybody could read. That's Robert. I wish we could quit polluting because it's bad for us. And that's Samantha. I wish I could fly so that I don't have to walk all over town. I could fly over town. That's Caitlin. I wish for everything to be all right next month. And that's Wendy. I wish my baby kitten would eat because it can die. I don't want it to die. That's Myra. Oh, dear. I wish the school was bigger and the toys were bigger. That's Juan. I wish I had a baby brother because I love babies. That's Alex. And Alexander also wished for a baby brother, probably copied Juan's or Alex's paper. Wish for a new motorcycle. That's Junior. Hector wants two baby sisters. And Tiffany, I wish for the world to be blessed. That was Tiffany. So, yes, the kids did very well at contributing.
Another common feature that I remember of the Patagonia Press was a listing of the top 10 of various kinds of things. Do you have one of those to share?
I do. Let's see. I'm not sure when this issue was. Top 10 reasons to live in Patagonia. Number one was breakfast at the Woman's Breakfast, formerly the Single Woman's Breakfast. Two, great hiking trails. Three, interesting, unique characters. I just think we should underline unique. Four, it's safe to walk alone at night. Five, sunrise and sunsets over the mountains. Six, great weather, mild winters. Seven, interesting birds and birders. Eight, being close to Tucson but away from the smog. Nine, seeing more stars than you ever saw anywhere else. And 10, dressing up in Patagonia means wearing matching socks.
I think a lot of people really enjoyed the sense of community character that always came out in every issue, one way or another. And was that conscious that you were trying to collect things that would show our community character?
That was the goal. Oh. Yeah, that was the focus of the paper. That was the only reason we did it.
So the centennial for Patagonia happened in 1998, and it was a big deal. And you put out a very special edition for that celebration. And what was that edition like?
Well, it was large. I think it was the largest one I ever printed. And it contained copies from all of the newspapers that I could find that had been printed and circulated in Patagonia, starting in 1912 with the Santa Cruz Patagonian, which was a very sophisticated paper compared to what we're doing today. I think I recall at the time having trouble finding anything about locals because it had New York news, it had national news, it was a regular newspaper as opposed to a gossip column, which we ended up with.
And so this actually was reprinted. You found one
yes.
of the earliest
yeah.
editions of the Patagonian,
yes.
and you
yeah.
reprinted it in the Patagonia Press.
That's correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's interesting. There's just all kinds of interesting stuff in this first edition that looks like it's from December of 1912. There was a store in town called the Washington Trading Company, and there's an ad here, "What every woman knows, Diamond M is as good as flour can be."
Yes.
And then it goes on to list all kinds of other things that the store offered for sale.
Right.
And mentions in the same issue, it mentions the new train service, that Patagonia has two freight trains daily. What do you see anything else from that 1912?
Well, I'm looking for it because I saw an ad from the Washington... Trading Company, where they talked about having porch dresses and silk dresses and one other kind, evening dresses, I think.
Oh.
I didn't know we had such a thing as a porch dress. I didn't know what a porch dress was. But I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, also one of the more interesting things was what Patagonia needs.
And this is from
And this is in 1912. And it says, following are some of the great needs of Patagonia. An organization of business boosters where miners, cattlemen, farmers, and merchants can get together and discuss propositions of interest to this section. Another thing was a deputy sheriff and police, a peace officer, and a $10,000 schoolhouse, which I thought was very nice. A daily and Sunday passenger train and mail service, such as was once in operation when but few people were in the country. A moving picture show, a telephone service, and more than 50 rent houses to take care of the people on their way here to make this their future home. Because this was sort of like a gold rush era, I guess. Maybe it was the silver mines that were doing it. And this place was hopping with people coming here to make their fortune. So it was a very different community then.
Very different basis for the economy.
Right.
Yeah. These old issues of the Patagonian from your centennial paper have a lot of information relating to the mines and various kinds of equipment needed for the mines and labor people who were in town.
The prominent people in the district, where it says here that these men and women prominent in world affairs have invested and are still investing in the many opportunities of this section. And among those were Colonel Theodore Roosevelt, George Westinghouse, Arthur James Phelps, Cyrus McCormick, Buffalo Bill.
Cody.
Who else did we have? Governor Woodrow Wilson. Oh, Secretary to Governor Woodrow Wilson. So, people were buying shares probably in these mines, and they probably brought them out and showed them the silver and gave them the tour and got their money, would be my guess.
So in some ways, Patagonia seems like it was more of a destination and more of a crossroads even than
today. My goodness, it had trains running, twice a day, I think. Yeah. So, yeah. And we had people riding the trains to go to Nogales and riding the trains to go to Sierra Vista. It was a very, very upscale little town, I guess.
Well, let's see. There were a couple other newspapers over the years that you mentioned. Are we ready to move on to them?
Right.
Mm-hmm. This, again, is from the Centennial issue of June of 1998 of the Patagonia Press. And the next one, you want to work on that?
Well, this is the one the Santa Cruz Patagonian, when Bob Lennon appeared to start it again in 1949. Mm-hmm. So that would have been the next paper in this evolution of the newspapers.
They kept the same name.
Yeah, they kept the same name. And there's was talking about a powder, what was it? Apache powder explosion that killed a couple of people. I don't know if that was in the town. I don't know about that.
There was one little piece in that I really enjoyed. Bob Lennon and Bill Torres spent the early part of the week near Hilltop on the east side of the Chiricahuas surveying a mining claim for patent. Bill saw several javelinas, a half dozen deer, and found the fresh tracks of a northbound mountain lion, after which fresh Torres tracks were seen southbound.
This also had clinic news. And that was great fun. Margie Laguna had her tonsils taken out. Candido Matricitos was struck in the face by a stick of wood, and it was necessary to take several stitches in her lower lip.
And Fred Benedict had a piece of rock removed from his right eye.
God,
on
so
Wednesday.
Did. My word.
This is from 1949. Actually, Monday, July 4th.
Okay. So then we moved into the Patagonia Provoker, the pleasantly provocative weekly that was published in this one in 1964. And this also was their first edition because the editorial refers to that. And this was when they were writing about moving the depot. And the Rotary Club was collecting money, and everybody in town was helping out to try and move it over. I presume so that the highway could go straight through town.
Mm-hmm. And that, it sounded like it was a really big community effort.
Right.
And at that time, it doesn't, they don't make reference to it being a place for the town hall or town government.
No, it doesn't. They had $400 that they had been pledged. And they were needing more funds, obviously. The Ranch News said, watch for an article on the control of screwworm for our next issue. This should be of interest to all ranchers. So we're sliding into the ranching phase rather than the mining phase. And it was an appliance display that sounded very spectacular at the community hall. And the ladies were watching the demonstrations of blenders and other appliances. There were 32 women. They reported it very interesting, and all the women got a good look at all the new gadgets. She even made a cake in an electric frying pan. So that was the news of that time.
And then we have the Patagonia Patriot.
Yeah.
And that was a newspaper that was published in 1969, and this looks like it may have been done with a typewriter and cutting and pasting and using a copy machine.
Yep. Uh-huh. Oh, and this is Anne Stradling's poem, After They Landed on the Moon. Our ways of travel sure have changed since tired horses drank at noon. The swaying stagecoach days are past, so now we're traveling to the moon.
And for those who may not recognize the name Anne Stradling, can you tell our listeners who she was?
I don't think that I ever met her. She started the Museum of the Horse in Patagonia, and I believe also the hotel. And she was dearly loved in town and highly respected, and very, very kind lady, apparently. She entertained people. I think I heard about either a Christmas or New Year's Eve party at the hotel when the whole town was invited. Mm. But her Museum of the Horse has moved to Ruidoso now, so that's gone.
Ruidoso, New Mexico.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's still possible to see all those items, mm-hmm. apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Now, do you have something else you'd like to read?
No, I just was looking here at...
I think you have another poem by Anne Stradling.
In the Patagonia Patriot, and this was in 1970. Our Patagonia Patriot has been with us a year. As months and weeks roll by, it betters its career, gives us much enjoyment. To Virginia we give praise with salutations and good luck for bigger, better days. 1970, July.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's one other thing that I have from the centennial issue that I thought was just really interesting and wanted to read, and that's an article that Mary Wetzel wrote for that issue. I won't read the whole thing, but what she was doing is describing what it was like in Patagonia in 1898. And she says, several rooming houses were available. The going rate was 25 cents a night for a cot placed in the room with others or wherever there was space. A private room cost 50 cents. Of course, the outhouse was used by all. Would-be miners arriving on the train, which had been put in by Southern Pacific a few years before, hastened to find a bed for rent. Shopping was different from today. There was a grocery store here, and apparently, like most country stores, it carried not just food but fabric, patent medicines, and the like. Some made the trip to Tucson to shop about once a year. This was accomplished by going in a horse-drawn wagon to the Andreas Ranch, which today is the scene of a little development before reaching I-10. The roads were not paved and travel was tedious. Families would overnight at the Andreas place and then proceed on to Tucson. The procedure was reversed when returning home. Why would people want to go to Tucson to shop when you could order from that wonderful, almost brand new company, Sears and Roebuck? Such necessities as a child's button-up shoes for 80 cents, or a syrup guaranteed to clear that child of worms for just 20 cents. Just looking through their catalog, you could find all sorts of treasures. A carpenter square for 20 cents, even furniture was available. This company shipped by railroad, and stories abound about ordering for Christmas and meeting each train, hoping for your package to arrive. If there was a shortage of church buildings, there appears to have been no problem finding a saloon. Pictures show they did a thriving business in Patagonia. Peace with the Apaches had come, and families such as the Farrells, Sorrells, and Canes no longer worried about safe hideouts for their many children. People met on the street and stopped for a word. They worried about rains and weather, and especially earthquakes, since a big one had hit the area 10 years earlier. And so today, we meet and talk and worry about the weather and shop. We talk with our neighbors about their business and our own. Not much has changed, except for the advent of phones, electricity, cars, and the like. What we still have is a community, and it is a one-of-a-kind place. That was Mary Wetzel writing in the June 1998 centennial issue of the Patagonia Press. And published by Mary Monroe. And Mary, do you have anything else from this centennial issue you'd like to share?
The poem by Mary Norman that's in here that I think is pretty terrific, but I have to find it. Okay, here. This is also Patagonia. If you knew when you first came here, you'd no longer need to roam. If you drive old cars with pleasure and can't stand the sight of chrome, if the thought of living elsewhere causes now your mouth to foam, chances are, dear friend and neighbor, Patagonia is home. If your fashion style is grungy and you're keen on dogs and cats, if you don't keep up with Joneses and you wear the strangest hats, if you hike or paint or write things are quite vague and not exact, it's quite likely, friend and neighbor, this is where you hang your hat. Watching birds or writing poems, helping neighbors, drinking wine, checking mail, a place for gossip, greeting friends and feeling fine. If all this is your lifestyle, then you're blessed by life divine, for it's sure, dear friend and neighbor, that your home is close to mine. We enjoy our small town living. Everybody knows us here. We might think we have a secret, but it's known to all, that's clear. Yet when all your chips are falling, you'll find friends who hold you dear, for the people of this township will support you, have no fear. Nonconformists, old and younger, rich and poor, strong and weak, from 1,000 different backgrounds came we to Sonoyta Creek. Weird and weirder, mild and zany, private, friendly, all will speak. Nowhere will you find its equal, Patagonia, home, unique. Isn't that lovely?
That's great.
Yeah. And Mary Norman used to have a shop in town that everybody loved to visit.
Called the Shop Out
the
Back.
The Shop Out Back, right.
And yeah. She moved to Green Valley.
Yes, she's in Green Valley now.
Mm-hmm. Now, are we ready to move on to the final issue of the Patagonia
yes,
Press?
Yes, sure. Uh-huh.
Now, if I recall, Olivia de Havilena had something to say about that.
Yes, she did. She finally was getting accustomed to writing, and she was a little upset because I decided I didn't want to do it anymore. So, Olivia said, "Well, I never. Just about the time I finally get good at this writing thing, you know it's not easy with these hooves, that uppity editor decides to quit. Now, if I could figure out a way to go it alone, I would, but I can't drive, can't use a computer, and I don't like town meetings. I'd be just great at covering the animal goings-on and, of course, the pig happenings. I guess that wouldn't fill a paper, and the animals wouldn't advertise, so there goes that idea. I guess Gregory and I will just go on having javalinitos, eating watercress, and visiting with our friends and neighbors. We may have a little more time to get into your trash cans in your vegetable gardens, so keep your gates closed or get ready for us. It's been fun having my own byline, but I guess nothing lasts forever. Cheers, Olivia de Javelina.
So, what caused you to need to end the Patagonia Press?
I think I got tired. And I just decided that I wanted to play a little more and work a little less. And I discovered that in doing a newspaper, even if it's a monthly, you're already collecting for the second month while you're putting together the one that you're in. And so it was kind of a nonstop process. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any particular end to it. And so I decided it was time to put an end to that. Mm-hmm. So I did.
And since then, you're spending some time on Cape Cod.
Right.
Every year and some time here.
Uh-huh.
I remember you saying that would make it hard to do
right.
something
yes.
around.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
So looking back, what was the most enjoyable part of producing the Patagonia Press?
Olivia. Yes. Yeah, that was fun.
Do you have anything else from that last issue that you'd like to share?
Well, here are the last of the contributors. And that was Jill Babcock, Bill Barker, Campbell Burke, Ann Caston, Carol DeLotte, Mary Wetzel, and Judith Whitcomb. And the final one, you've lived in Patagonia too long when, one, you get sick of it, two, you feel your sense of humor brooding in the treetops with the vultures at the end of the day, three, you forget how bright the stars are and how clear the air is, four, you are in another place and realize the bird songs aren't heard there as they are here, five, when you realize everyone is not watching you, or if they are, they don't care, six, the tree you bought your house because of dies, seven, you know the local dogs and cats by name better than their owners, eight, you don't even notice the junkyard next to you anymore, oh, I skipped nine, 10, your Patagonia roots go so deep there's no way you'll ever leave, 11, when you think our town council knows what's going on, oh, whoops.
As you think back on your years with the paper, do you have any other thoughts that you'd like to share with us about what it was like for you?
Oh, it was great fun. I got to meet so many wonderful people and had so many stories. Everybody had a story. Even if they didn't know it, they had a story. One of the best stories was an arranging couple I was interviewing, and I said, what interesting or fun or whatever happened in your life? And she said, nothing. I said, well, something must have happened in you. No, I mean, nothing that I can remember that was ever of any importance. And a little later in the conversation, she said, well, my husband can't hear too well. You have to speak loud, because when he was hit by lightning and knocked off his horse, I said, what? And that was the kind of thing that was happening all the time, and I never knew where it was going to come from. It was wonderful. Full of surprises.
Well, and you must have, I know you did a lot of advertising, and so collecting the ads from people, mm-hmm. that must have been quite a challenge.
Well, it was, yeah. And that's the thing that nobody wants to do, because nobody wants to pay you to advertise. And, of course, you can't run a paper without it. And Patagonia is a small town, so it really couldn't support a paper. So we did get outside advertisers. But, yeah, that was one of the less fun parts of the job, for sure.
Do any other stories come to mind right now about?
Oh, dear. Think. I don't know, they're just... Everywhere I looked, there were such remarkable people who didn't think they were remarkable at all, providing all these wonderful, interesting vignettes in their lives. Well, probably the Wenig story that I did. Yeah, that was fun. I did an article about the Wennings. I interviewed local people and told them about their lives, and I took a picture.
Okay, and you're talking about Don and Doris.
Don and Doris Wennick, of course. And so I did the article, and I put the picture beside the article, and I was just filling up space, and so I filled it up with something that I'd cut out of somewhere. And when I published it, I realized I had put directly under their picture, seniors have AIDS. And then the list was Band-Aids and Rolaids and every kind of other AIDS you can think of. And of course, we all just about died laughing because it was so awful. But yeah, there were occasional things. I noticed a picture of the minister that I put beside his picture was something about the ladies' organization, and I thought, oh God, I did this more than once. Oh dear.
Well, it truly was a remarkable and community effort, and it was a wonderful thing that you did for the community. I understand that there's talk now about another newspaper possibly starting in Patagonia. What have you heard about that?
Yeah, well, there's a meeting. The people are meeting and discussing, you know, what to do and how to do it. And I don't know if there's any consensus at this point. There are all kinds of different ideas. I had a thought because there is so much virtual information now. And since Papyrus, people have been leaving messages and communicating with paper, and suddenly it is all going to be in the air. But
you mean digitally?
Digitally, yeah. And then I remembered at the World Trade Center, watching when everything was being killed, all the paper flying out the windows. The paper was surviving. So I wonder if paper will continue to survive with all that's happening today. I sort of hope it does. It's a very direct communication. You have to use something to play everything else.
A device or something.
Paper is very direct. It's between you and the piece of paper, and there's nothing there to help interpret it or bring it to you. Mm-hmm. So it has its merits.
And there is paper prior to the kind of paper that had acid in it.
Mm-hmm.
But that older kind of paper lasted for hundreds and of years.
Right, yeah.
So it was actually fairly durable.
Yeah.
Until recently.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been reading letters that, from my great-grandparents in the whaling days and in the middle 1800s that are beautifully legible, beautifully written, and very intelligently written, which is kind of surprising. You don't realize they could do that then. Yeah.
And when you say the whaling days,
I'm a descendant of a whaling captain, and so I have a lot of that history.
Whaling ship that would go out and...
Right, yes, so yeah, out of Nantucket, and yeah. And go off for 4 years and get whales and oil and go all over the South Pacific. And my grandmother was born in the South Pacific as a result of one of those adventures, yeah.
And you have letters from that time.
Yes, I have copies of the letters. They're in archives, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if I recall, you did a trip to
Been to most of the places they mentioned in the letters and taken back history, taken back copies of the letters that told about that particular place or the people in that place because they didn't have as much history as I had. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. So that was fun.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the Patagonia Press, is there any last thought that you have before we wind down?
Not really. You have to ask me questions to make me think.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for being with us today on Community Talk.
You're most welcome. It's been great fun.
It's been very fun for me. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed going through all the, not all, because we weren't able to look at all, but many of the newspapers. And I should say that we found most, if not all, of the copies of the Patagonia Press mm-hmm. at the Patagonia Library.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some Patagonia provokers and some Patagonia patriots mm-hmm. also there. Mm-hmm. And they also appear to have a large stack of weekly bulletins. But to get the Santa Cruz Patagonian and to look at those, you had to go to Nogales, right?
I went to Nogales, and I also went to the university archives. And I cannot remember, because I was researching so much, I can't remember where I found them. And it may have been at the university. Mm-hmm. Because I have made a note on one that was so fragile that they were no longer allowing people to copy it. I think that might have been at the university.
Mm-hmm. So if people are interested mm-hmm. in reading some of these papers mm-hmm. on their own, they're welcome to go and mm-hmm. talk with the libraries or with the university.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you again for being with us today on Community Talk, Patagonia Community Radio, KPUPLP 100.5 FM. Charlotte Lowe will be back next week with another edition of Art Talk, Sunday at 5 p.m. right here on 100.5 FM. K-Pup is always looking for additional resources. There are lots of open slots for more DJs and hosts. If you have an idea for a show you'd like to do, contact the station at 394-2150. If you value the show and would like to sponsor it, please call Casina for underwriting information. $50 per month will give you up to 3 mentions per day, the who, what, when, and where of your business. To reach Casina at the station, dial 394-2150. Many thanks to Casina Farley and K-Pup for support for the show, and to Charlotte Lowe for loaning her recording device. This show was recorded in advance because Mary will be out of town on the date of the broadcast. Thank you to Meg Gilbert for managing our setting today. And thank you for listening on K-Pup, KPUPLP 100.5 FM, Patagonia.